This is the Friday night after the Feast of Tabernacles. And we're a little sort of sparsely settled here tonight. Just we're not all back yet. And I'm sorry to speak on the subject I'd chosen for tonight. I wanted to have this auditorium full, and also the college gymnasium, that as many as possible could hear it. However, some of the other ministers have urged me to go ahead with it anyway. I thought I would turn to a different subject tonight. But I may repeat this again when a larger number of people are here, because it is very, very important. This church has been off the track, and I'm not sure we're 100% back on the track yet. But we're getting there, and we're beginning to please God. And when we please Him, He blesses the work, and He blesses us. The nation is in the doldrums, the world is in the doldrums, and in violence and trouble. This nation is now in a recession, there's no question about it. I say even the government in the White House has finally admitted it this week. And there may be worse times coming. Now, God has been holding things back in world events that are prophesied. Things that are prophesied, the main things next prophesied is the resurrection of the medieval so-called Holy Roman Empire in Europe. Undoubtedly, half of it will be in Western Europe and half of it in Eastern Europe. You have 10 nations going together. But it is the way of God in a time like this to let things go slow. You know, even 1,000 years sometimes are like a day with God, and they whip by very rapidly. At other times, the day is like 1,000 years. Seems like it'll never end. And God has held things and is going to hold things back. We read in the 7th chapter of the book of Revelation of how He sends an angel to hold back the plagues that were prophesied to come at that time. Now, we're not quite to that time yet. That is yet future. Till He seals the servants of God in their foreheads, 144,000, and another innumerable multitude. And that will be the Laodicean church. That will be the tag end last church of the 7 different eras of the church, the remnant church. And that hasn't come yet. A lot of people have been wondering, where is the Laodicean church? Well, it hasn't appeared yet. Don't waste your time looking for it. It isn't here. You can't find it. But it will be here. And when the God's time does come, He will let things happen very, very rapidly. It's going to take your breath now. Believe me, it really will. And I'm looking very closely at world events right now, especially over in Poland, and things that are going on there, the action of Russia in regard to Poland, and what is going on in the Vatican, and a few places like that, and so are our news people. We have our own news staff here on campus. I don't know whether all of you realize that or not. It's part of our publications, The Plain Truth and others, and our writers. But we have the teletype sticking off there 24 hours a day and all night long, all day long, just the same as newspapers have, and also the news departments of television stations or the television networks, so that we keep abreast all the time, and we have a group of researchers constantly researching news, filing and cataloging special events, and keeping a file of things up to the minute, all the time, so that we're right on top of these things that are going on in the world. And they are men who also know the prophecies of the Bible. Well, I wanted to talk about something else altogether tonight. How did life begin? You have to start in the New Testament in John 1, to find how life really began. I want to see if we get a little different meaning out of this tonight. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was a personage. That was a great spiritual, supernatural personage. And the Word was with God. That is, that personage was with another personage, and the other personage was God. And then in the next verse we read that the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God, and all things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made. Now that Word, we find in the 14th verse later, was born of the human Virgin Mary and became Jesus Christ. But He was not Jesus Christ originally. He's just called the Word here, but He was God. And there were God there in two persons. One is called God and the other the Word, but nevertheless the Word also is said to be God here. In Him was life, L-I-F-E. Now, in God was also life. So they lived. The two personages lived, and they had lived forever. Now, of the Word, we find over in the book of Hebrews that He was without father, without mother, without beginning of days or end of life, without descent. There was no beginning. There will be no ending. Has always existed. Now, your mind can't quite conceive that. You think He had to start living and start existing at one time or another. But He didn't just exist. He lived. Or they lived. And they had been living, alive, and actually living. Those two, and apparently only those two, in the whole universe. In fact, there wasn't any universe yet. They hadn't created that yet at the beginning. But they had been together from eternity, if you know when that began. It didn't begin, it always was. But in living, they were living together. And perhaps billions times billions of years, or trillions times trillions of years. You can go on, and your mind can't quite conceive that. It's so great, and it's so long. But now they had lived together, and they knew how to live together. Two cannot live together except they be agreed. You'll read that in the Scriptures that they've given us and inspired. So they were in perfect agreement. They lived in peace. They lived in harmony. And while they lived, they also had power of mind, supreme mind, mind that was able to plan and to design everything that has come into existence, to produce it, to bring it into being. They say to bring something into being out of nothing. I don't think that's exactly the way it was done. But being spirit, they were able from spirit to create all matter and the entire physical universe. But they were not physical. They are and always were spirit and spirit beings. Not physical at all. But the way they lived was the way of life that we call love. That is an outflowing concern, each one for the good and the welfare of the other. However, we find that the one here called God was even greater, and that the Word did only as God said. And so in the third chapter, I believe it is, of Ephesians, you read how God created the whole universe and all things by Jesus Christ. The Word. The Word spake, it was done. And the power that did the creating was the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit emanating from them. Now, they lived a certain way of living. They had minds to think with and to plan. But they had great accomplishment. And they live to work and to design and to create. And designing and creating was their work, their business. And they were creating in a manner of great accomplishment and in peace and in happiness and joy and the joy of great accomplishment. But they created other beings having minds, first angels, and later they created man. They lived by a law, and that law was love, outflowing love one to the other. Now, where there are two, you know, a lot of young people getting married say, well, we don't want to have, the husband is not to be boss anymore, we want to live 50-50. You know, you can't do that. I don't know whether you noticed or not, but the recent royal wedding in England, I was over there at the time. And in that wedding ceremony, there was nothing that the wife had to obey the husband. That was all left out. Well, it was going to be 50-50. Well, let's watch and see whether it lasts or not. When you have 50-50, that will always mean the wife is wearing the pants and is the boss. Someone has to be. Two can't live together. Just 50-50. One has to be the leader over the other. Now, God was the leader. Why didn't Christ resent that, and why didn't he speak out for himself and stand up for his own rights? Why didn't he? Why didn't he say, oh, I'm just as great as he is. I'm going to run things. No, he didn't do that. He was the Prince of Peace. He was a maker of peace. He lived the way of peace. He had humility, but he also had power and strength. He had great strength and great power and yet meekness. If you can understand that, because meekness doesn't mean weakness. Now, he lived in a certain way, and that way was outflowing love, each love for the other. And so that is a way of living, and they made it a law. That is, God, the one who became God the Father later, the one who was called God, made that as a law. And that is a law that we find given in Exodus, the 20th chapter in the Bible. Now, they had created man, but here they had a law. And as that law was given to man, we read of it here in the 20th chapter of Exodus. God spake all these words, saying, I am the eternal thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. This was said to the ancient Israelites, and they had just been brought out of the land of Egypt, where they were slaves, out of the house of bondage. Then he gave the Ten Commandments. I won't go over them now. I'm going to go over one of them a little later. But there was a test commandment. And that begins with verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, that happened to be the test commandment. That is the one commandment that the world holds in question. They will accept the other nine, at least in principle. I know they don't obey them. But they will accept that maybe we ought to have the other nine, but that one, that's the fourth one. They don't agree with that at all. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, some people don't know what that means, but God had made it holy and told us to keep it that way and not to profane it, not to trample all over it and make it unholy, to keep it the way he made it. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all of thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gate. That is, don't work them. If you use them in labor, they did use oxen, and at least don't cause them to labor and do that kind of work. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heaven and the earth and the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore, the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now that is the test commandment. That is the one that people will haggle over and don't want to obey. They want to change it. They want to make it Sunday. Our question tonight is, how do you keep it? I've had two other Bible studies on the Sabbath question prior to this, but it is very important that we understand not only about the Sabbath and that God commands it and what it is and why it is, but how do we keep it? He said, keep it holy. How do you do that? Just what is meant by that? I want to tell you first about an incident that will begin to set the groundwork for it, I think. It was, probably nearly 40 years ago, I was holding a series of Sunday night services in the Chamber of Commerce Auditorium up in Seattle, Washington. And I had an audience, probably not quite as large as this audience, because that was a small auditorium, it wasn't as large as this. It probably seated about, 300-400 people. But I would always go out a side aisle and shake hands with people going out the door at the end of the service. And there was one lady going out one time. She said, "Oh, Mr. Armstrong, I want to ask you a question, if I may." I said, "Well, certainly." Well, she said, "Someone told me that you don't keep the Lord's Day, and that Saturday is your day. I do hope that's not true. But I want to ask you personally if that is true." I said, "Well, no, that's not true." I said, "I do keep the Lord's Day, and Saturday is not my day." "Oh," she said, "I'm so glad to know that." But I said, "Well, I'm not sure you quite understand. Now, you see, Saturday is not my day, Sunday is my day." "Well," she said, "I'm just glad to know that." I said, "Fine. But," I said, "Monday is my day, too. And Tuesday is my day, and Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. But," I said, "when I come to Saturday, that is not my day. That is the Lord's day. And I do keep the Lord's day. I told you, I do keep the Lord's day, but Saturday is not my day. Saturday is not my day, it's the Lord's day." I said, "You've been mixed up and you've been misreading your Bible. You need to read your Bible again." She threw her head back and she walked out in a huff. And she never came back again, you can be sure. Well, her mind was already made up. She didn't understand, but she might have been very sincere in what she believed. Nevertheless, that's what she'd been told. Now, we turn to Mark, the second chapter, and verses 27 and 28. "And Jesus said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath.'" Now, he did not say the Sabbath was made for the Jew. He said the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. "Therefore, the Son of Man," which is he himself, or Jesus Christ, "is Lord also of the Sabbath." Therefore, the Sabbath must be the Lord's day. Now, that seemed very plain to me. But other people had been told that Sunday is the Lord's day. Now, I would take a check out of my pocket, except there isn't one in it, and write it out for $1,000 for anyone that could show me any place where the Bible calls Sunday the Lord's day, because it just doesn't. It speaks of the Lord's day in only one place in all the Bible, and there it really means the day of the Lord. And it isn't speaking of the day of the week. If it did, it would be speaking of Saturday. But it is speaking of a period of time. We've been in the day of man, or the day of Satan, and we're going to come to the day of the Lord when the Lord begins to take over and run things. And that's what the book of Revelation is all about, because that's in Revelation chapter 1, verse 10, and that is the setting, or the, you might say, the summary of what the book of Revelation is all about. Now, the Sabbath was made. It's one of those things that was made. Well, then, who made it? I just read to you in John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and all things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. So, therefore, the Sabbath is one of those things that was made. So it was made by the Lord. That's why it's the Lord's day. He made it. It was made by Him. Now, He said it was made for a purpose. Made for man. Of course, if made for man, maybe that doesn't fully express its purpose, made for a greater purpose, but it was made for man, for the benefit of man, nevertheless. Well, we go back and read about when it was made. And we see about when it was made. In Genesis 1 and verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens, plural it is, and the earth. Now, we don't know when that was. That might have been millions or billions of years ago, too. Anyway, He created the heavens and the earth. And, as I told you before, in Ephesians 3 and verse 9, God created all things by Jesus Christ. And Christ is the Word. He spake, and it was done. And the Holy Spirit is the power that responded when He spoke and brought it into being. But God the Father ordered it, designed and planned it. Christ might have had His part in that designing and all of that too. But now we turn to Genesis, the second chapter. Well, first I want you to notice the 26th verse of Genesis 1, verse 26. And God said, "Let us make man in our image." So you see, Elohim's a uni plural, which includes both the Word and God, and they're both God, and God is more than one person, a family of persons. And Elohim is a word like family, or like club, or like church, more than one person belonging to a club, more than one person in a church, more than one person in a family, but only one family. One church, and so on, and people can't seem to understand that. They think there must be a lot of churches. There's only the one and God that is God's church, only one, that is the real body of Christ. And so Elohim said, "Let us," not me, "let us make man in our image after our likeness." He was making man after the God kind. He made animals after the animal kind. But He was making man after His own kind, the God kind. Now, in Genesis, the second chapter, and beginning with verse 1, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended His work which He had made." Now, He did not end creating. He only ended the work. He doesn't say He ended creation. You notice, what He ended was work. Now He was not going to work. He was going to create something by rest. But He's still creating. And from that time on, He's going to be creating character in human beings. But first He was going to create a Sabbath day. On the seventh day, God ended His work which He had made, and He rested on the seventh day from all of His work which He had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, or sanctified means set apart for holy use and purpose. Not for just any old use, but for holy use and purpose. Blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it He had rested from all His work which He had created and made. Now, again, it was made for man, and it was made when man was made. It was not made for the Jew. It's not the Jewish Sabbath. Now, God, here I've spoken of as Yahweh, which means the one who later became Christ and who had been the Word, rested and was refreshed. He is the one who rested on that day. Now, Christ then, or Yahweh, the Lord, put His presence in that day and also His fellowship with the man and the woman that He had created on the sixth day. On the sixth day, He finished creation by creating the man and the woman. And it says male and female created he him. And so he spoke to them and taught and had a fellowship meeting with them. You notice here in the 16th verse, Genesis 2 and beginning with verse 16, and the eternal God commanded the man that he had just created, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. Now that was pronouncing a death sentence on him if he took of the fruit of that tree. That tree was a symbolic tree. Perhaps there was a real tree there. I'm not questioning that. But it, whatever kind of tree it was, and I can tell you, I think I could say definitely it was not an apple tree, because the world seems to think it was, and the world has to be wrong. But I don't know what it was, whether it was crabapple or peach or pear. I don't know. Anyway, it represented taking to himself the knowledge of what is good and what is evil. And it represented also rejecting the tree of life. And so he pronounced the death sentence. Now, in other words, death is simply the punishment of breaking the law. You can't have a law without a penalty for transgression. Otherwise, it isn't a law. Now, he pronounced the penalty of death. So we know that while the Bible doesn't give us very many of the words, he probably began speaking to the man and the woman he created on Friday afternoon at sunset. And then through the evening until time for them to go to sleep and get a night's sleep. And then on the day part of the Sabbath, of that first Sabbath. And he put his presence in it and had fellowship with them at that time. Well, now, how about us today? I want you to see that he has not quit having fellowship with us. We turn now over to 1 John in the New Testament, near the end of the New Testament. 1 John 1 and verses 3, or just verse 3. That which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that also, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with the Son, Jesus Christ. Now we are to have fellowship with the Father and the Son, as well as with one another. Now, is there an appointed time when we meet together to have fellowship together? Is there? I'll turn to that a little later, but the Sabbath day is a holy convocation where our presence is commanded. You know, right there is something different in this church than any other church I know. All members, unless we are simply away and unable to be here, or sick or for some reason unable to come, are present at the Sabbath service. It is a holy convocation. Now, a convocation is an assembly that is convoked, if you look in the dictionary. And to convoke it is to command it. It's not come if you want to, or come once in a while, or come on Easter and Christmas, as the world does. Of course, we don't observe those days anyway. We observe the days that God tells us to observe, that God says are holy convocations. I will show you later the Sabbath is a holy convocation. Well, let's turn to that right now. Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23 and verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but in the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord, not of the Jew, but of the Lord, in all your dwellings. Now you will notice again, it is the Sabbath of the Lord, and it is a holy convocation. It is set apart for holy use and purpose, and we're told to assemble together. And when we assemble together, we not only have fellowship with one another, but we're having fellowship with the Father and with the Son. And when we are here in fellowship, as we are tonight, this is the night part of the Sabbath,
And brethren, do you realize that in spirit Jesus Christ is here tonight in this auditorium? This auditorium is dedicated to Him and the great God, their name in gold letters out in front in the Grand Loggia. And they are here and assembling with us. And we're in their presence. Now, it was Jesus Christ who put His presence in the Sabbath day by meeting with the only man and woman that He had created and that were alive at that time on that first Sabbath. And He meets with us when we're here. It's a holy convocation. And we're commanded to be here. Now, how do we keep the Sabbath? Well, one thing is we attend God's church services. And we come into the presence of a holy God. It is a holy convocation. Now, it's His presence here in the day, in the Sabbath, that makes it holy. And He is here with us. Well, now let me give you Exodus 3. Why did I have Exodus 3, 1 to 5? I don't remember why I put it here, but let me go back to that. Oh, yes. Now, Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, and his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb, or Mount Sinai, and the angel of the Eternal appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he, or Moses, looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. It just kept on burning and burning. It probably was a very small bush, a bush that would burn up. Moses must have seen it when he was some little distance away from it, and he kept walking toward it, and it was still burning. He walked on past it, and he looked back. It was still burning. And it was a small enough bush. It should have burned all up before that time. Now, he was curious, so he looked back. Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight. Why the bush is not burnt. That is, why it wasn't burned out. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. Moses said, well, here I am. And God said, draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place wherein thou standest is holy ground. Now, what made that ground holy? The ground a couple of hundred yards back was not holy. The ground 100, 200, 300 yards ahead was not holy. But that ground right there was holy where Moses was standing. It was the presence of God there that made it holy. And God's presence is in the Sabbath day. And His presence in this day makes it holy time. Beside, He blessed it, set it apart, sanctified it, and made it holy time, and told us to keep it that way. Now, it is holy to Him, and it's supposed to be holy to us. And I showed you that in the previous Bible study. Now, it is a holy convocation. We're told to assemble. And His presence is here, and that makes it holy time. Now, then, when we come here, that brings another thing about how to keep the Sabbath and how to come dressed when you come into the presence of God. You know, one time, as a matter of fact, it was on December the 1st, 1968, I was in Jerusalem. And I had been in one of the university buildings and visiting with Dr. Aviram, one of the leaders of the Hebrew University, on the faculty, and we had talked for a while, and we were leaving then for a meeting with the president of Israel. And the time had come for us to leave and walk over to the president's mansion, as it was at that time. They later built what they call, it's a small palace, but a very small one that they built for the president in Israel. Because they are a poor nation, they didn't build a great, magnificent one. But anyway, it was the house where he lived. It was a very nice house. Well, we walked down the hallway to the elevator, And Dr. Avram said, "Hey, wait a minute, I've got to go back." He said, "We're going into the presence of the president of Israel. I have to go back and put a jacket on." Now, he was just in shirt sleeves and open collar, no necktie. And it was warm weather, and he didn't even have a coat on or a jacket. So we went back to put a jacket on. Well, they don't dress so well over in Israel. He still didn't bother pulling a necktie because they just don't do that there. But at least he knew he had to dress properly to come into the presence of the president of the nation. And we were going over to meet the president. Well, of course, I was already dressed up for the occasion. But I just want to show you that did make a great difference. Now, it makes a difference to God how we come attired when we come into His presence. And I want to mention that now because I find that God's people, some of them, are very sloppy in the way they come dressed or attired to God's Sabbath meetings. They come any old way. They seem to think they can just dress up anyway in the presence of God. If you want to know how to keep the Sabbath, one thing is, you are commanded to come to church unless you're just unable to come. You better have a real reason and not just an excuse. There was one man who thought he didn't need to attend church and had not been attending church at all. I wrote and told him about it, and I said, "You are now cataloged as a non-member. You're not a member of the church," although he thought he was. But you are to come properly attired. And God's people, many of them, have been off the track. And we're getting back on the track now. We're going to come properly dressed when we come into God's presence hereafter, brethren. That's one of the ways that we're going to get back on the track. I'd like to have you turn now, if you will, to Matthew 22. Matthew 22, beginning with verse 11. And Jesus is telling of a parable here. He says that there had been a wedding planned, and when the king came in to see the guests coming to the wedding, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. He didn't come properly attired. He didn't have a wedding garment on. Now, did that make any difference? And Jesus is showing Jesus is the king. And when we come into His presence, we have to have proper attire on. And He saith unto him, "Friend, how camest thou in hither not having on a wedding garment?" And he, the man, was speechless. Then said the king, now that is God really saying this, that's what it means, it says it to any of you that think you can come attired any way at all. Then said the king to the servants, "Bind him hands and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many shall be called, but few chosen." Some have been called, but they don't care. And they don't care how they act and how they treat God with contempt, any old way. Come attired any old way when they come into God's presence. Brethren, you cannot do that. You ever see me come here in overalls? You ever see me come with a dark blue shirt on or something? I try to set you an example. Now, we have never told our ushers just turn away people and don't admit them. Tell them to go home and get some suitable clothes on. And I hope we won't have to do that. Now, by that, I don't mean you have to go out and buy special clothes. I mean you should come dressed with the best you have. Maybe you don't have as good clothes as someone else. That's all right. Such as you have, use it. But come dressed up. You know, whatever is being dressed up for you and the best that you have, that's the way you should come into the presence. Not because of me, not because of the person that will be sitting next to you, but because of the presence of God and the presence of Christ here in this service with us. Their presence is here and they're having fellowship with us. Can you come into the presence of the mighty God like is this any old way? brethren, we're going to get back on the track. That's all. I say we're not all the way back yet, but we're getting back there. Now, I say the Sabbath was made for man. It was. It's made for our rest. And when we work, now, we don't all work with our hands and our bodies and our legs. Some people get very tired. I have worked in an Iowa hay farm, pitching hay when the right season comes. And I know what it is. I know you can, you get up about sunrise or before, and by noon you're hungry. And you have a great big dinner. In the afternoon you go out and you work and you sweat and you work. And by night you're really tired. And rest seems very good. But also I have worked a great many years with my mind. And my body needs more exercise and doesn't get enough. And sometimes I'm tired using my mind and I need to rest it. But it is a time for rest and relaxation.